Welcome to Share Talk, the only podcast where investors come first.
Hello and welcome to Share Talk. I'm Charlie Gibson now. As you know, we like to bring you high-performing companies on this show. And if I tell you that the following company has had its share price go up 300% in a week, that is to say it's gone up four times, it's quadrupled in the space of the week. Well, as the Americans say, you do the math. The company in this particular case is called IAMFAR PLC. It is listed on the Aquis Exchange, and joining me now is the company's chief executive, Burns Singh Tennant-Bowie. Burns, a very good day to you. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. So come on, tell us, how have you done it?
Well, look, I to give a bit of kind of color and background to the vehicle itself, I led a restructure and recapitalization of the company last October. And from that point, we raised a small amount of capital to just rationalize the balance sheet and put it back into an operational status. And what we kind of focused on was making sure that whilst we're on a more junior exchange, if you like, in London, when comparing it to the likes of AIM and the LSE main market, we wanted to make sure that moving forward, any of the capital that we wish to raise would have a very specific remit. And it wasn't a case of going to raise capital to simply just retain its listing, that we wanted to attract the right sort of financing participants to actually drive through the internal corporate strategy that we're building. With that being said, I think that really actually all that's been demonstrated is that we've been able to raise quite a significant amount of capital when putting it in the context of our present market valuation, because the pre-money valuation of the company at the time was around circa £200,000. And of course, today we announced the appointment of someone I've known for a long time and worked alongside as our non-executive chairman. So we're just starting now to kind of roll out the strategy that we have in place. And I think it's just been well received by the market. It's nice to see that companies on the Aquis, which I know that, you know, people have their own sort of opinions on the exchange, people have been fairly receptive to, which you don't see too often. So no, very happy with the first week. It's great.
So, I mean, just tell us about your experience of raising money. You raised, what, £500,000, there or thereabouts. You were oversubscribed. Was it an easy process for you to raise money on that exchange?
I think raising, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, raising capital is always, I think, quite challenging. I mean, my background is, Charlie, I run my own private venture capital firm. And we do a very high volume of transactions across international exchanges, including the TSX, TSXB, CSC, AIM, LSE. We're very active in the marketplace. So, you know, with that comes, of course, a network and previous transactions that we've entered. So it's something that, from my point of view, I'm quite used to doing, and originating the transactions is something that I do quite a lot of. Was it a task on this one? It takes slightly longer because, of course, the biggest concern people have is the apparent lack of liquidity that you have within the exchange. But I think what we found really comforting is that the exchange is kind of now, certainly upon the acquisition by Aquis, seems to be taking a new form that we're very excited by. And we're kind of, again, just kind of drawing back onto that experience in North America. I remember the Canadian Securities Exchange many years ago kind of had that same image of you would call the broker and there's no online accessibility. It's over the phone. The brokers don't even really want to push the trade. And then all of a sudden, over the last 3 or 4 years, you've seen this wave of liquidity and interest meet the exchange through basically just very innovative transactions. And it's now at a point where it probably does, if not more liquidity than the main exchange of Toronto being the venture on the small cap side. So, you know, a long-winded answer, but what I'm trying to say is I think that what people were definitely kind of seeing from what certainly I was trying to do was trying to replicate that sort of innovative transaction on an exchange that people are not necessarily following too closely, and trying to have that sort of first mover advantage upon the successful acquisition by Aquis. And we think it's going to be quite exciting for the market. And we think this is a superb exchange to operate on. And I think the shareholders and the incoming investors kind of supported that view.
Okay, so experience so far is a pretty positive one as far as you're concerned. Tell us, you know, you raised this money. Tell us, what is the new strategy of the company?
Well, we're currently finalizing that, Charlie. We're not quite at the point where we want to disclose it to the marketplace. But what I mentioned in the market release, which was a corporate update and a strategic financing, was that we've kind of honed in our focus to three kind of core areas, which are natural resources, which are, you know, most people have, you know, the idea that it's very intrinsic to the mining space, but actually it's a bit broader than that when you look at it. Mining and exploration, because that's where a lot of my experience lies, and disruptive technology. Now, under the current company structure, our investment strategy is only enabling us to look at opportunities within the mining and the oil and gas space. We have actively looked beyond that, but we want to be in a position where we're closer to something material before going to the shareholders and seeking consent to change the strategy of the business. And it has to make sense for the company and all our shareholders. So per the RNS, those are the three core sectors that we've been identifying in a lot of detail since I took the company over late last year. And I don't think we're too far away from something material that we can announce to the marketplace.
Are they natural bedfellows, natural resources? I mean, you say that's where all your historic expertise is, but from that to disruptive technology would seem in quite a lot of people's eyes to be a fairly large leap. I mean, to be good at one thing, yep, understood, but can you cover that, those two, if you like, ends of the spectrum, encompass all that, or is that too big an embrace, if you like, for one person's expertise?
Very fair point. And that's why we are actively also looking to complement the current boards with people active in the industry that have a lot of firsthand experience in these sectors. It's absolutely important that we have complementary members involved in the business. With regards too much of a leap, I think it's to do with the strategy of the business. I think if I was to tell you today that we were going to build our own disruptive technology company based on what we've done today, that maybe wouldn't be very well received within the marketplace based on the experience of the board members. But that isn't the strategy that we have. We're looking to essentially look at very disruptive assets across all the three core sectors. And we're looking at the best way to take a commercial interest in those opportunities that are operated by experts that have done tremendously well and have a very successful track record to that extent. So I think it comes down to the distinction between being an operational vehicle that manages its own asset base or being a company that is seeking that value and looking to have that sort of passive investment over assets that are, I would say, quite rare for the global market to get opportunities to be at such a kind of attractive level, if I could say so. So I think that's the key distinction, Charlie. Absolutely right. But we're not looking at the moment anyway, at taking any sort of operational interest that would see us have to directly manage, oversee and develop the assets we're currently identifying.
I see you've bolstered your, if you like, natural resources pedigree today with the announcement of Mark Bamber as executive chairman. Tell us a little bit about him, and I think I know why you chose him, but tell the audience why you chose him.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, well, Mark's a lovely guy. I've known Mark for a long time, and we've worked on various transactions in international markets together. And he's a very hardworking chap. A lot of energy, a huge global network. He is world known, and he's been involved in some very successful transactions, primarily in the natural resource industry. So you know, per the RNS, Mark's background is with the RAB Capital Special Situations Fund. It generated a huge net return for shareholders in excess of 45-50 times. They had assets under management over $2.8 billion. And with that, of course, comes, you know, 20 years of first-class experience within capital markets. So I think that it's a really nice complement to the board, particularly in the role of non-executive chairman, where you've got someone that is being in the position of reviewing hundreds of companies and having to make quite pressurized decisions. So I look to Mark as someone that can kind of really rationalize a lot of the structures that we're putting together, and sort of uses industry-wide experience to kind of give us some guidance as to whether or not it'll be well received by the market. But I think that we have very complementary skill sets between us, and we kind of know where we want to drive the business. But it's always good to have someone to challenge you on every transaction you wish to pursue and enter.
So tell us, with that in mind, what do you think the next 6 months looks like for the company?
Very busy. Very busy. We're hard at work on a number of acquisitive opportunities that we see as being very central to the internal strategy we're building as a business. And I don't expect there to be too much of a delay in updating the market as to where specifically we're taking this business. I thought this interview would be helpful in just kind of providing an overview of what we've done since I took over the vehicle last year, the injection of new capital that has been very well supported with the appointment of our non-executive chairman today. And just to kind of make people aware, because it's a difficult exchange to get that sort of following on. You know, it's quite difficult because of the issues that we all know, which is the lack of liquidity and the difficult trading conditions. But, you know, I'm always a believer that irregardless of where the opportunity vests from an exchange basis, if there is value, I do believe capital follows. And that's something that I'm a big believer in. And that's why, even though we're London-based, for many years, I've been very active in foreign markets, because I'm someone that seeks distressed value that I wish to augment in my own way. And I'm not really someone who bothers too much about whether or not there's difficult trading conditions, or there's different market opening hours, or if you have to have specific broking accounts, because at the end of the day, we're looking for value and how to generate substantive capital growth. So that's kind of in a nutshell why we want to do the interview. And I think we're going to have a very interesting and busy 6 months ahead for the market and our shareholders.
So the $500,000 you just raised, is that going to be deployed in investments, or is that basically working capital and then you're going to have to come back to the market?
We have a very low burn. Our burn is essentially non-existent. We do not pay salaries to directors. We are equity incentivized. For us, we don't even pay down, for example, you know, office costs or something. We just share. We have our own commercial units that we work out of. So in terms of, you know, just looking at the working capital side, you know, our core burn is maintaining the listing. And we're very keen on making sure that until either we reach a certain market valuation, or of course we get through our warrants, which generate a substantive amount of capital for the business, that we want to keep the costs of the business to an absolute minimum. And I've made that clear on a few of the news releases, that we want a lean vehicle. So in terms of the use of the proceeds, you know, for us, there's a few ways to look at it from a transactional point of view. And for me, I'm actually looking more about using instruments that protect the capital. So it could be, you know, blended combinations of cash and potentially equity or warrant instruments. And we can be quite flexible with how we put these transactions together. So to answer your question, low burn rate. And with regards to the deployment of the capital that's raised, I don't foresee it being much of an issue with regards to having to return to the market. Certainly not in the near term.
So can I ask, do you have a preference for listed or non-listed investments?
I'm pretty agnostic, but I think that certainly on all the transactions that I've put together in the past, I very much like the private transaction side of things, because you have a lot more flexibility when you're structuring and engineering the transactions than you would if you are a listed entity. So because you have so many different variables that you have to consider that comes along with being a publicly listed company. So it's not that I have a preference, but I think for what we're trying to achieve as a company, which is to generate, you know, considerable capital growth for our shareholders, I would be more interested in the private side of the transactional arena.
Well, whilst that has some advantages in the sense that it gives you flexibility, the one area, I suppose, where there might not be the same flexibility is in liquidity. If you want to exit a position for whatever reason, how do you weigh up those two things?
Well, that's always the issue. You're essentially buying, as you quite rightly stated, you're buying assets just in your balance sheet that you can't actually crystallize until an event happens via a trade sale, or in fact you take the company to its own public listing. So for us, it's very important that the opportunities we're looking at, through either our augmentation ourselves internally or through the existing board and management involved in the opportunity, have a very clear and defined path to a public exit. That's absolutely a requisite for us. We are not looking at companies that will remain private. And we'll be making sure that that is something that is a kind of requisite for any investment made. The benefit we have, of course, that, you know, it will become probably more apparent as we update the market, is that a lot of the companies and the opportunities that we're reviewing have incredibly strong balance sheets. So, you know, we're not kind of actually at the stage where we're looking at companies that are, you know, having to raise the capital to survive and get to the next stage. We're looking at companies that are actually already at a very, very integral part of their growth cycle, and they have the balance sheet to support that. So yes, it's absolutely important we have a defined exit strategy, and that will be a requisite for any investment we decide to make.
And would you look for a board representation as well?
If it's required. The thing about board representation is that, you know, you take on the form of being in that sort of activist area, that sort of activist investment fund area. And sometimes there is a place for that. But I think that, again, it just comes back to the caliber of the companies you're dealing with. Sometimes it works very, very well to parachute in management when you are truly taking over a distressed situation in the marketplace. But if you have what you consider to be a very high caliber management team and a board of directors that support that vision, then actually you don't want to disrupt or interrupt that process at all, because it can cause more damage than good. So it's completely opportunity dependent. And if it warrants augmentation through the parachuting of board members of FIRE or nominee directors, then we will of course take that into consideration. But I wouldn't actually say that that would be the preference for the company.
Burns, thank you very much indeed. We wish you the very best of luck. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Burns Singh Tennant-Bowie there, the chief executive of IAMFIRE PLC. What, as Jeremy Clarkson might say, what will IAMFIRE do next? Well, the answer might be, does it matter? Their share price has gone up from 2.5p to 11p over the space of the last week. So as the Americans say, you do the math. This is me, Charlie Gibson, signing off for Share Talk. We'll be bringing you more such investment opportunities in the very near future, we hope. But until then, you have a break.
Thank you for listening. Remember to visit our website for more news and other podcasts at www.share-talk.com.